Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.
Pastor Maluleke, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Malote.
How are you doing?
I am well, and you?
I cannot complain, man. But all is good, and God is good.
Yeah, that's true.
Thank you so much for joining us once again this afternoon. Now, to those who are joining us, we are speaking to Pastor Maluleke, who is joining us for the second time this week. He is talking to us about building and nurturing the church family. And so your family of origin is the one that you are born into. You had no control or choice in the matter. Your family of origin may have been very nurturing, or it may have been a dysfunctional family. Either way, your family of origin is fixed and cannot be changed. However, when you are born again through Christ, you inherit a new family, the family of God, and which is what is bringing us to today's discussion. Now, Mfundisi, what steps can churches take to transform themselves from a random group of people who happen to meet regularly for worship to an actual church family?
Yeah, I think there are several things that I will mention. The first one is, how does the church view itself in relation to its members? And I think the first thing is that the church should see itself as the theater of God's grace, where lives are transformed, where people are not perfect, but they are on the journey in a process of being progressively transformed into the stature of the measure of Jesus Christ, which means we may also see a church as a hospital where sick people go to be cured. It's not a place where people who are healthy come just to enjoy themselves, you know. So, and I think once we position ourselves into how we, in terms of how we project ourselves to our members or to people out there, then we'll be able to create an environment that is conducive for people to feel like this is a family. The second thing I want to mention is that members should also take responsibility for their own faith. Remember, we belong into this family because God is our Father and we are His children. Nobody else makes us God's children. John chapter 1, verse 12 and 13 says, "But as many as received Him, to them He gave the right to become children of God, to those who believe in His name, who were born not of blood, nor the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God." Now, when we go to church, we do not go apologetically. We belong to the family because God has renewed us and we have been born again into God's family by God Himself. That's the first thing I wanted to mention. So 1 John chapter 3, verse 1, we will say, "Behold, what manner of love is this, that we should be called the children of God?" Now, having said that, let me say, for the church leaders, there are things that we can do. Because, yes, eternal life belongs to God. Going to heaven belongs to God. But as a church on this earth, we're an organization run by people, and therefore leaders have a responsibility. Number one, know your members, if possible, by name, and know where they stay. I used I've been a missionary in Korea for 12 years. And, in my first 2 months, the director, on my first day when I arrived, the director, the pastor, called me to his office. We spoke for about an hour. He was just making a connection, making me feel welcome. You know, he said, "I have an open door policy, or anything. If you want to talk, my door is open. You can come to me." That's leadership responsibility. He knew me by name. He knew my challenges. He helped me personally. So know your members, know where they stay. Do home visitations. These are old-fashioned things. They are not very easy to do these days. We want, appointments. You need to protect children. It's no longer as easy as it was in the past for people to meet. But let's make the effort to visit our members as leaders. Let's have scheduled social activities, because usually when we go to church, it's about studying the Bible. It's about presentations, about worship. But let's also have scheduled social activities. I scheduled hiking In 2022, with my young church members, 30% of the people that came were non-Adventists.
Mm-hmm.
Our people came who are no longer coming to church, but also for outreach purposes, the 30% that came were non-Adventists, and they felt like they belonged because we have time to introduce ourselves and we had social activities that are inclusive.
Yeah.
To everyone, comfortable. There are no suits. There's nothing there. And you know, after that, I scheduled something that was not even in my plan, a soccer game, where most of our church members who are no longer coming to church came because it was a social activity where we could talk in a relaxed environment.
Yeah.
And then the other thing, of course, would be to take Paul's advice in Romans chapter 12, verse 15, where he says, "Rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep." That means when there are funerals, let us be there to support. When there are weddings, let us be there also to celebrate with our members. But finally, I want to say also, embrace unity in diversity. I was in South Korea for 12 years, but it was not only myself and South Koreans. There were Americans there. There were Filipino people. There were people from many different African countries. And we made it a family environment because there would be a time when we say, you know, let everybody bring their dish. You know, let the Filipinos bring a dish, a Filipino dish. Let Zambians, Kenyans, South Africans. I remember South Africans brought maguenya and some other things that we are uniquely South African. You know, we are trying to say we are not uniform. We are not a colorless society, but God has created a colorful society. You know, we come from a different environments with cultures, and there's a way that we dress, there's a way that we talk, you know, there's a way that we sing. So when we create this environment in our churches where people feel included, it also helps to create this environment where we are not just a random group of people who meet regularly, but we actually create a church family where everybody feels appreciated and welcome.
Beautiful. You know, I like what you said earlier, and I wonder, and it's a question I've asked myself for quite a long time, that while we know it's a noble idea that pastors should actually do home visitation, we it's a strange thing nowadays because we don't see that happening anymore. Is it because pastors are now busy with other things? Maybe they're employed elsewhere or what? I don't know. Because it looks like members should just forget about that and say and tell themselves that, nah, it's okay.
Yeah, of course, the ratio comes into play. When I first arrived in South Korea, we had 6 pastors in one church. And now, of course, you would also add elders and deacons as part of those who do visitations. In South Africa, especially in the, I don't know whether to use that word, the black church, because we don't have any structural racial divisions, but it just happens that we'd have some churches who are, that are in the townships or in the rural areas that are, you know, predominantly black. The ratio of pastor to church is insane. Having said that, let me also say the pastors in the 70s to the 80s, they used to do home visitations even with this ratio, and with less mobility in terms of the internet and many different ways that people could be visited, with roads that were mostly gravel. Church pastors were known to do visitations. So there's something that has changed, but what I've seen now, especially in the conference where I am, ministers do not stay in the vicinity of their churches. They actually commute, sometimes only on Sabbath, you know, to preach to the church. And if there's a funeral, they will stay over maybe at one of the church members, places, and then conduct a funeral or a wedding on Sunday and then go back home.
Mm-hmm.
So there are those challenges, but those sometimes can also be deeply structural problems because they don't exist everywhere in the Adventist church. They are particular to some churches. Or conferences, for example, you don't find pastors in other conferences or unions struggling to have a house when they go to pension. So with the older generation of ministers that we would say they were very dedicated and committed, then they used to do home visitations. They would be staying in a mission house, and some of them wouldn't even be planning to buy a house. And you have a situation where now you know, if you are fortunate, then the minister will live long to even reach retirement and make a plan for his family, and I mean his wife and his children. Now you will have a case where the minister probably passes away even before retirement age. The minister's wife, who has just been a minister's wife, serving the church, dedicated, doing children's stories, singing and doing all these things, now is stranded. Because the pastor has not bought a house and they've been living in mission houses. So the ministers today, you know, they are trying to purchase, stay in one place, purchase a house, commute to the church. So that's why I'm saying this is not uniform, but it means the leadership has to find ways in order to, number one, deal with the issue of the ratio, deal with the issue of taking care of ministers and their families and their children. Because remember, we don't also want pastors' children who are going to hate the church because they feel that the church didn't take care of their parents who committed and dedicated themselves to the service of God and the church. So it's not an easy one answer kind of, or one solution fits all kind of situation, but the leadership needs to attend to the issue. But also, of course, we need pastors who are committed to serve their members, even with the little resources that they have. They can have a schedule, say, this month I will visit this church, that month I will visit this church. But I, you know, in situations where a pastor is absent for 6 months from any of his churches, and you know, those things also need to be addressed by leadership. And so I'm saying it's a multifaceted problem that needs multifaceted, multidimensional solutions.
Beautiful, beautiful stuff. I agree 100% with that. Now, you know, the world that we're living in, Pastor, is quite unsociable. Mm-hmm. I think that's why perhaps it also spills onto the church. You know, people have built tall walls around them. But those who live in the suburbs will tell you that they generally don't even know who their neighbors' names are. You know, they hardly even see them. You just maybe meet in the in the streets of your estate, but just hoot and go by. You don't even know what their names are and their interests are. Now, with that said, is it still possible to build meaningful relationships in this very unsociable environment as church members?
Yeah, that's another good question. You know, I was teaching social media to Pathfinders last year at some church, but they wanted to separate and say just teach your Pathfinders. I said, no. This lesson needs the adults as well, because when you're talking about social media, it is the parents who buy the smartphones. It is them who buy the TV and the gadgets, you know, the screens, where even in families, people don't no longer talk to each other. They no longer eat dinner together. They don't worship, you know, have devotions together. Everybody's on their phone. You see two people meeting in a restaurant, and soon afterwards, everybody's on their phone. So we are basically connected but disconnected, connected technologically, disconnected socially and relationally. Is it possible to still build meaningful relationships? Yes, because now, you know, loneliness and isolation are actually an epidemic globally.
Like
you said. Because of these walls, I stayed in Korea and I saw it, like neighbors don't know each other. They don't talk to each other. So it's not even a national thing. It's an international thing that we are connected and yet disconnected, which means people are lonely. People want, but because we are created as social beings, we always want a sense of belonging, which means if the church creates social spaces for people to belong, they can actually attract and keep people. Because so I was in South Korea, where I was a foreigner myself, and there were many foreigners from many different countries, you know, and we created that environment where people used to belong. So people would be saying, I mean, you'd be a student, probably an African student in one university. There's another African student in that university. I'm teaching in the church institute myself, surrounded by mainly Korean people and a few, an American, maybe a fellow South African, an Australian sometimes, or a British person. But we were few, we were outnumbered. But on Sabbath, it was time for us to, you know, in the afternoon, we had small groups, not just a big group setting, but in the afternoon, we had small groups. Now, all these foreigners would have Bible studies together. After that, we'd go eat dinner together. After that, we'll go decide whose house are we going to. We're going to play games because we want to maximize this weekend. On Sundays, we'd go biking together. We realized, you know, I love soccer, but I was also, you know, I had a bike. But eventually, you know, I was biking regularly because there were four or five of us. And then we, you know, influenced others to fall in love with biking. And we're like a biking club. That's what we used to do. We created this environment for ourselves. So I'm saying, even in this high-tech, connected world, social media world, we can still connect when we look for common things that we can do together. Take care of one another. I mean, eat together, play together, pray together, study together. Those things are still possible.
I appreciate that you had to take those initiatives. I mean, it's a beautiful practical example. Take those initiatives to make sure that people come together, play games together. I mean, also the example that you made, you know, from your church, I think from about 2 years ago, where you organized a hiking date for church members and also people to come together to play games, etc. Now, but there may be people, you know, and I think built by the society that we live in today, who are now socially anxious, we call it social anxiety, who feel out of their comfort zone in the company of other people. Is there hope that we can make it happen, all these examples, with people who have got social anxiety?
Yes, there is, because God's grace is sufficient and his strength is made perfect in weakness. Social anxiety is a mental health issue. So, of course, people need to identify their triggers. What is it that gives me anxiety? Is it the people themselves? Or is it because these people are strangers, you know? Is it because they are asking me to speak or to pray publicly? They have not even prepared me. You know, they'll just say, Brother Zama, can you please close for us in prayer? You know, so you may need to identify the triggers. Number two, set boundaries. If you are uncomfortable with what you are being requested to do, if you are being asked to participate, you can politely say no, I'm not ready for that. So people sometimes feel compelled to speak in public, to pray. Sometimes it may be helpful because you may be anxious, only to find that as you practice, it will help you. But if you know you have a social anxiety issue, identify the triggers because you must be responsible for your situation. Set boundaries. Also choose the, you can, you know, choose the way you want to attend. Remember, these days there are many churches that also connect virtually or online. You can choose to say, I will go in the morning to listen to the divine service, because during that time there's actually not much interaction except the people that have been requested to do certain things. You go to church, you pick a spot, arrive early, pick your spot, so that you don't come in late and then you are going to walk in front of people, you know, people watching you. Come on time, pick a spot, sit there. And maybe in the afternoon, go back home also and join the service online. Or also, even in a large group, crowd of people, you can still pick one or two people that you know. So there are many people that I'm going to talk to, that one. I'm going to stay by that one. You know, they make me feel comfortable and they make me feel welcome. I'm comfortable. It's, you know, even people with social anxiety are still comfortable around certain people. So they are, so I'm saying, identify your triggers, set boundaries, find people that you can be comfortable with, and then also decide on how you want to attend. You want to stay at home because you are still connected visually and online, but at least once in a while it would be good to go to the church, because also the more you attend, the more you get used to the routine and the people and the familiarity, it becomes easier on you. Also the size of, and the culture of the churches. Churches are different. You may have to look around for a church where you feel comfortable, because the music in some church may be kind of what is the word, conventional, you know, modern music that is too fast paced maybe for you. You may prefer a traditional conservative kind of church setup. So I think on this one there is hope, but people need to take an effort in terms of what works for them and what doesn't work for them. But because you know, also reading the scriptures themselves, you know, Philippians chapter 4, verse 6 and 7 will say, be anxious for nothing, you know, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known unto God. And the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and minds through Christ Jesus. You know, when I preach about fear not, I usually say there are 365 Bible verses in the Bible that says, fear not, one for every single day. So it is Jesus himself, he says, do not worry, do not be anxious. Mm. So let's also, let me not forget to get therapy. If it's too serious of a situation in terms of a social anxiety disorder, get professional help. And I would encourage churches, to have mental health awareness desks. Because I'm part of Aruka Mental Health Awareness Group, and when you go to churches, this is what we teach. Have a desk there. You may have a psychologist in your church, you may have a social worker, you may have a medical doctor, you may have other health practitioners. Have that desk to be able to help people who may come forward and say, I have a problem with this and I will need coaching or counseling or help, you know, to overcome it. So therapy can be useful as well, but Bible verses to cancel yourself, to calm you down. You know, Jesus says, my peace I leave unto you.
Yeah.
You know, there are many things that I can say on this one as well.
Lovely.
But I hope you can summarize the steps. Yes.
Yes. Now, Pastor, before I let you go, I see our time is gone, but I've got to ask you, can one then be part of a family if, they've got nothing to offer? A person may ask themselves, man, I don't have no gift. There's nothing that there's no talent, but not much knowledge. Can I still form part of the family?
Yeah, first of all, it's a fallacy that there's anyone without a gift, because God has given gifts to everyone that is biblical. The problem is that people think a gift is preaching and singing and in the Adventist church. Yeah, mostly preaching and singing. We think those are gifts when you talk of gifts. But remember to smile to other people, that can be your gift, to be hospitable. To share, you may not share possessions, but, you know, to share your time, because some people just need you to smile to them, greet them. You can share kind words. You can read the Bible, which is not expensive to buy. You can, you can share a Bible verse. It can be one that you have read. It does not need a lot of knowledge, but, you know, for yourself, for your own spiritual growth, you need to be studying the Bible. You can just pick one verse that say, you know, and share. You can share your story, about your life and how that verse maybe encouraged you, how you became a Christian. Your presence itself is valuable. You know, just showing up without showing off. Just show up and be there. You know, Jesus says, be the salt of the earth, be the light of the world. And to be the salt of the earth, you don't need to be making noise. You just need to be there, even if you are quiet, and then you smile. I remember this pastor that I said my first director in Korea, he was so upfront in terms of welcoming me, taking care of me. For the whole year, because after that year, my first year, the pastor had to move with his wife. And it was the first time I realized that the wife couldn't even speak English. Because I would greet, but she'd smile back and greet back with a smile. And then in my mind, in hindsight, I was like, actually, she has never spoken to me, but she has been smiling. She has been making me feel welcome without saying anything. So I'm simply saying it's not accurate to say you don't have any gift, you have nothing to offer. Your presence, your smile, your words, unless if you are saying you are disabled, you cannot even speak, but smiling can still happen. Sign language can be taught these days. There are many things that we can intercede for people in prayer. And you can say to someone, I've been praying for you. You can appreciate those who are preaching, those who are singing. I thank you. You have blessed me with your sermon. You have blessed me with your music. And I'm praying for you. May God be with you. I'm simply saying there's a lot that we can do to encourage. Encouraging is a spiritual gift. Not everybody encourages. Other people discourage others. Other people gossip. But you can choose to share the gospel instead of gossiping. You can choose to pray for others.
Beautiful.
You can choose to be a listener. Yes.
True. I've learned quite a lot out of this afternoon's conversation, and I do hope that when you're listening there, whether you're in the office or home or even at work or on the road, you also have gleaned quite a bit out of this conversation. Mfundisi, I must thank you so much for coming through and conversating with us about this very, very important subject, and all of us should be engaged and involved in the church family. Blessings to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. Let's go back to the question as well that said, what are some challenges that stand in the way of functioning as a family? We did not do that one. Let's do that one tomorrow.
Okay, no, that's fine. We'll get to that tomorrow, yes. All right,
yeah,
then.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Pastor. Blessings to you, and until we speak again.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.
Sure, bye-bye.
Adventist World Radio, from broadcast to baptism, powered by SID Media.